Welcome back to Beyond Packaging, where we break down the forces shaping packaging and everything in between. I am Laura Fodi, and today I'm not joined by Matthew Wright. He's actually traveling. I believe he's in sunny Seattle, which there's about 2 months in the year, I believe it's sunny. So he's in Seattle visiting a few SpecRite customers, but I'm joined by a very special guest host who has held multiple roles across SpecRite and someone who I consider a mentee. Danielle Goh. Danielle, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Laura, for having me on today.
Of course. Danielle, for those of you who don't know her, although I would say that's a small list, Danielle's involved in so many things we do here. She's the Senior Manager of Strategic Projects, Office of the CEO at SpecRite. She's held roles across departments, including customer success, product, and strategic partnerships. She leverages her diverse experience to drive strategic initiatives, guide the product roadmap, for SpecRite Network and manage the Spec Assist and Spec Squad digitization services. Prior to SpecRite, she graduated from Cal Poly State San Luis Obispo,
Go Mustangs, with her
undergraduate degree in industrial technology and packaging focused on supply chain. Danielle, we're so proud of you.
Thank you. Definitely Go Mustangs to all the Cal Poly people out there.
Yeah. So what are some of the, before we dive into the packaging news, what are some of the fun things you're working on these days?
Yeah, I mean, kind of like you listed, I feel like I've held a few roles at SpecRite over the years now, almost 6 years. And I think some of my focuses outside of like some of the internal strategy is really some of the global expansion that we're looking to do with the company. We have some exciting news that I'll be moving across the pond. I'm going further and further east, apparently. I'm originally from San Diego and now it was kind of in near headquarters, went to New York over the last few years, and then I will be jumping over to the pond to start talking with some of our customers out and supporting them in Europe. So excited to make that move soon.
Yeah, we're excited to have you out there. If you're listening and you're based in the UK, in Europe, give Danielle a shout. She's going to be there before she knows it.
Yeah, I'd love to come see some factory tours, some on-sites with people, you know, in the food space, cosmetic space, and learn more about the accounts out there.
Yeah, there's also just so many great packaging events in Europe. You've got Paris Packaging Week. There's a big one, I believe, in Amsterdam. So Danielle will be going to all those. There will be lots of opportunities to connect and meet with her. And then Danielle, you want to talk a little bit about your involvement with our academia program? I mean, you've really spearheaded that here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think from my time at Cal Poly and being in the packaging school, just going through the program that so many of these students go through, it seems like a niche major, right, compared to the industrial engineers or architects or other, you know, positions out there. But I think that it really gave us a sense for how we can start to ingrain technology into these programs and specifically start to learn SpecRite and spec management and best practices. A lot of these students are learning how to, you know, develop packaging for specific products, how to make these packaging materials more sustainable and evaluate those in their schooling. And so to give them actually a technology that helps kind of enable that and even learn it over multiple years, I think just gives like an added layer to, you know, the textbook style of learning essentially. And so we've worked with, you know, I think it's now 14, maybe 15 company or universities globally that are, you know, all teaching packaging to a wide variety of students. Some are doing really impressive capstones where they're working with actually companies to solve problems and, you know, managing their specs in the system. Some are going a level further and integrating with, you know, LCA tools with our system to actually do some of that analysis. So it's really impressive to see, I guess, the student experience over the years and SpecRite getting involved in these universities.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will tell you, as someone who spends a lot of time out there with a lot of the food companies, consumer goods companies, manufacturing, this just could not come at a better time. Every time I'm on site, someone tells me, hey, we're trying to hire two roles. Do you know anybody? I mean, and then they have people who have been there 30 years that are retiring. So we're really in this interesting, I would call it, you know, a brain drain in packaging specifically, where We've had people who are working in these industries for decades. They're retiring and moving on. And then, you know, we have to bring younger people in and ultimately give them tools that they want to use. And I think part of what we're hearing a lot of our customers tell us is they're implementing tools like SpecRite to help attract talent, because talent wants to go where there's these tools so that, you know, they're not chasing data in their first job. They're actually, you know, developing sustainable packaging. So that's a great segue into some of the stories we have here. So Danielle, you know, you have a packaging background too, which is really fun. And you're subbing in for Matthew today. The first article we have, near and dear to my heart, from Packaging Dive: there are new widely recyclable and home compostable Starbucks takeaway cups that are going to be launching in Europe. So this new hot cup replaces plastic linings and lids with compostable, recyclable, fiber-based materials. This gives consumers a widely recyclable and home compostable alternative for when they don't have a reusable cup. I will tell you, as someone who goes to Starbucks every day, I very, very rarely have one with me. Or if I do, it may not be clean and it's challenging. So I think this compostable cup is really interesting. And it was created through a partnership using the Starbucks EMEA team, Transcend Packaging in Wales, Quartzo in Italy, and Mezza Board. And these cups will be rolling out in May 2025. Danielle, what do you think about compostable cups?
Yeah, I mean, I think that also this is really interesting to kind of see Europe start with this specifically. Obviously, the States are a huge market for Starbucks as well. But I think when we think about like compostability, like the European consumers is already so much more used to taking action on compostability, whether it's like food compostability or other practices that they kind of already have baked into their culture more so. And so I think it's, you know, a great place for Starbucks to start and kind of try this, given, you know, some of the progressive nature, I guess, of like the sustainability actions taken in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say, you know, anecdotally, I feel like more people I know in the US are composting now, which to me is fascinating. My future in-laws were, I was throwing something away and they're like, no, there's the compost. I'm like, since when do you guys have compost? Yeah. You know, like they're not like the people you would think of doing these things. So it is coming, you know, a lot of my friends have it, they have it. And so I'm seeing it more in homes that I'm going into on a regular basis where people are composting. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if this takes off in Europe. I agree with you. It's such a natural place to start. But it'll be interesting to see if it trickles down to the US, especially California. We tend to be very special here in California, especially when it comes to the environment. Up next, Clover Sonoma cuts plastic by 34,000 pounds with a paper yogurt cup. Man, again, this seems to be a trend today with shifting materials. So California dairy Clover Sonoma gives yogurt a paper makeover with a new 80% paperboard cup, dialing down plastic by 83% and shrinking its carbon footprint by 75%. You know, it's the first U.S. company to have paper-based yogurt cup packaging, which is fascinating. And while it makes significant progress towards sustainability goals, it still doesn't totally meet all recyclability standards. You know, there tend to be trade-offs. Danielle, what do you think of a paper? To me, this is just like a paradigm shift as a consumer. I'm so used to getting a single serve plastic yogurt cup. What do you think consumers are going to think about this?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are plenty, especially of food base that we're so used to in the like plastic, whether that's the feel or the artwork and like how things are displayed when we're, you know, purchasing these kinds of snacks or food items. But I feel like the, you know, paper kind of option, as long as it's kind of holding up when it's being shipped, when it's being eaten, especially if it's something cold in the fridge, I feel like the paper-based option to reduce on packaging is a great alternative.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm personally excited about this. I have a lot of guilt over single serve things, but it's just so practical. I mean, I've bought the big yogurt jugs, but I'm definitely the consumer where if I don't eat it after a few days and then it's open, I start to get a little, you know, I get a little grossed out. And it's, and some people aren't like that, but I certainly am. So I like having a single serve option. So I think if there can be a single serve option that is also more sustainable, and I think too, there's such concerns over the concept of microplastics in general with the things that we eat. So I can see how this would have a lot of appeal.
100%. I think ultimately there will always be the need for single use, right? Whether it is because of the food safety aspects of things or whether it is like the convenience aspect of like today I went to a WeWork for the day and I needed a single serving yogurt actually conveniently. And so I brought one, you know, today instead of the whole big bowl. So I think, you know, companies making the effort to find the sustainable solutions for these and packaging, you know, taking the time to innovate on their packaging will be critical.
Yeah. This next one's exciting to me. Clean Cult rolls out redesigned refill system at Target. So they make, you know, soaps, cleaning products, things of that nature. So they're going to pair pre-filled aluminum bottles with recyclable paperboard cartons and a packaging revamp that reduces plastic and simplifies reuse for everyday consumer. The launch includes 17 SKUs across hand soap, dish soap, all-purpose cleaner, and laundry detergent with redesigned graphics. This marks a shift from an earlier pairing of its refill cartons with reusable glass bottles. The glass bottles sold empty and requiring at-home filling presented too much of a behavioral barrier. I think this is really interesting because, you know, when we think about shipping glass and moving glass, you know, that's, you know, actually it's breakable during transit. It's heavier, which isn't necessarily more sustainable. So it's interesting to see the shift to aluminum and then this recyclable paperboard. I think what's fascinating, though, is if you actually look at the article, and this is from Packaging World, the carton looks like a creamer carton you would get. So, you know, I always love when packaging is kind of borrowed from another industry. So, you know, we're talking about consumer goods, but the hand soap refillable paperboard is something you would see more in the dairy aisle. Danny, what do you think about that kind of pulling from other industries?
I mean, it was interesting. That was like the first thought I had when I saw that picture. I was like, this looks like a milk carton. And I think it's like absolutely critical. I think, you know, when we think about sustainability, a lot of people don't consider it to be as competitive of a space. Like everybody is trying to learn about designs and materials and suppliers that are going to help their business innovate. Especially like the collaborative kind of atmospheres when you're going to the sustainability conferences or talks, right? Like everybody is marching in the same path. And so I think it's critical for, you know, industries to kind of learn from one another of what's working and what's not. I also think when I kind of read this article, I was interested about their, I guess, switch to filling the initial bottle that you receive, right? I think because they found that like, oh, buying an empty bottle and then filling it was almost like already too much for the consumer. They kind of, you know, gave you a starting point. And I think that's like something, right, they're going to learn over time of like how these refillable solutions make the most sense. But they're definitely making big strides in this and the, you know, article as well. They talk a little bit about the palletization that is like contributing to some of their transportation emissions, or like reducing the transportation emissions, as well as just like cost overall. The plastic bottles they used in the first one, they could only do around 600. And in the new pallet, they're shipping 26,000 units of the cartons flat. So that's a huge difference in the number, you know, that they're able to logistically ship.
Wow, absolutely. And I think, you know, I love seeing brands like this because this is an area where I think refillable is easy, right? I mean, who likes running out of soap? Nobody. And it's so easy to buy a few kind of nice aluminum pumps and then buy this refillable carton and you're kind of good, right? You're stocking up on these things every now and then. So I feel like the behavior shift, you know, I know they mentioned challenges with the glass, but I think this is really exciting. I'd love to see more and more brands do this. I think consumer goods is just a great, great place to start.
Yeah, I think this is one area personally as a consumer I adopted the quickest, like when you were talking, like I think that this is, I am the consumer who buys the extra thing to do the refill when I'm buying the initial thing as well. Like I like to have it on hand and know I'm not going to run out of my shampoo or my dish soap, right? Like I kind of have that in my storage. And I think a refillable solution, especially for these kinds of things, are definitely easy to adopt as a consumer.
Yeah, Absolutely. Well, this next one's a fun one. We were talking about the next generation. There was an opinion piece in Packaging Dive called Gen Z Wants a Circular Economy, But at What Price? Compared to their elder millennials, apparently I'm an elder millennial. I don't know how I feel about that. These Zoomers are better educated on sustainability and environmental issues than any generation before, according to a research report by EY and nonprofit JA Worldwide. More than 60% of Gen Zs are looking to actively reduce their environmental footprint for reusable packaging initiatives to truly be scalable on a broader scale. There needs to be significant infrastructure in place to support these reusable programs and legislative alignment. I think we're seeing that with packaging EPR. Different reasons, right? I think packaging EPR is coming about because of the infrastructure challenge in terms of disposing of waste and putting more burden on the producer. But there also seems to be consumer demand. And, you know, one thing, I was taking one of my marketing classes and it talks about how certain brands, you know, we don't think about this, but if you're Procter & Gamble, right, and you're mostly selling to young moms, well, those young moms become older moms, and then you've got to get the next generation of young moms, right? And so it's just gotten me thinking of like a lot of these big brands have to start getting Gen Zs because they capture them throughout a lifetime. So the fact that Gen Z is already signaling they want more sustainability, I think has broader implications. What are you seeing when you're working with a lot of these students?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, like Gen Z is coming up on the ages where, right, they are like the next market to be buying, and you want to capture them early. So as a P&G or whatever staple brand in a household, they become lifelong buyers of this, you know, I'm sure like all of the brand recognition. But I think it's kind of like, you know, what we talked about earlier. I think the Gen Z population expects more of the technology piece, expects more of the sustainability piece, are more educated to know what is greenwashing and what is not, right? Like, while they might not be the packaging engineer background from Cal Poly, they might know when they're going and making their choices at Target or another retailer that, you know, these are the things they're looking out for. And I think they're just being more, you know, timely with like what they're selecting.
Yeah. I mean, I do really see this coming through in the generation as an elder millennial. You know, some of my friends aren't having kids, and and it's not just because, you know, they're eating too much avocado toast, which is, I feel like our generation, we were always made fun of for that. That wasn't the reason, you know, avocado toast was the reason we weren't buying houses 5 years ago. But you know, some of my friends are like, we don't see it being sustainable. And I'm like, wow, that's a big life choice to make. Based on your feelings about sustainability and the longevity of our environment. And so if people are making decisions like that, I'm not surprised to hear it coming to every trickle into every type of everyday purchase we're making. So I think Gen Z, super passionate. We've had interns who, again, I'm like, wow, they are natively more sustainable than I am even. Right. And so it's interesting to see every generation kind of adopt this more and more. It almost feels like I would describe it similar to technology adoption, where like you see young people fully adopt new technology, and it feels like the young people are more fully adopting sustainability.
Yeah. And I mean, sustainability, right? So broad, and them as consumers could care about different elements of it. And that's hard for a brand to target every which way and know what is going to resonate with the larger group of their audience. But I completely agree.
Well, Danielle, thank you so much for joining us. Beyond the Shelf, Beyond Packaging. Whoops, little Freudian slip there. Really enjoyed having you on. I'm so excited for your move. So proud of you. Can't wait to come visit you in the UK in the summer.
Yes, only the summer.
Only the summer. And you'll have to come out and visit us when it's winter and you need some sunshine.
Absolutely. You know, I'll always be back.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us on this episode of Beyond Packaging. You can connect with Danielle on LinkedIn. As she mentioned, she's going to be our one of our globetrotters. So be sure to find her at industry events and on the other side of the pond. All right. Now it's time to go off the shelf with our friend, Matt Dingy. Matt, what product do you have for us today?
So today we are going back to 1982 to a resealable Diet Pepsi.
No way. I don't remember that. I didn't drink a lot of soda when I grew up, but I do not remember that at all. And the graphics. I mean, look at that.
Yep. Wow.
You can see here. Like, I don't know if you can see. It's a two-piece can. So the lid with the reclosable is on its own piece here, but it's definitely advertised as a half-liter resealable can.
You know, it's funny. Laura said it, but I mean it. If that was at a distance without the name of the company on it, I would think that was a shaving can cream.
Yeah.
It's funny how graphics, but look at the graphics. The graphics are so appropriate to the time. I remember them. That looks like something from the late 70s, early 80s from a graphical standpoint. From a product standpoint, yeah, it doesn't look like a soda at all. What's the top closure? Is that plastic or what? Or
Yeah. So it's a plastic fitted into the metal, kind of that top piece, and there's a two-stage. There's a ring that you pull to open it, and then you click it back down to reclose it.
You know what's funny? This is so popular with, I mean, not this exact form factor, with water bottles. Yeah. Remember when the sport bottle came out and people were like, oh my gosh, like you just flip the cap up. And that's kind of what they did here.
I still keep one of my aluminum water cans and refill them. So it's a concept. What was the other claims? Anything else on the label besides refillable?
Let's see. 1 calorie per serving. So that's the diet, obviously, is the...
Well, it's not one calorie if you refill it 10 times, right?
Right. Low-calorie carbonated beverage, but it's half a liter. That's resealable.
I'm not good at metric. Is that this big?
Yeah.
Oh, so that's a lot of soda.
16.9 fluid ounces.
Is it got like a heavier texture to it than an aluminum can today? Is it more like a steel feel or is it tinnish?
I would say it's pretty comparable to today, I would say.
Huh, interesting.
To a aluminum kind of 11-ounce can, I would say.
Well, you know, it's again back to our whole theme, which is they had the right idea, which was refillable, which is again a big word today. You know, what's going to be fun about the collection is looking at all the claims and kind of trending them over time as we get the digital library up. But no, this is a great example. I don't remember this product at all. It comes from an era when we don't think that was going on, but obviously there was attempts at doing that. Great work for Pepsi and the team back in the 80s trying to become, you know, more sustainable.
You know what's interesting? I wonder if this doesn't have a place today in other beverages. Like, I'm going to get so much. I'm going to sound like I'm from California right now. I just live here. This would be great for like kombucha, where like you want to buy something, you know, like kombucha is so hard to seal because it's carbonated. Like immediately once you open it, you start to lose it, but you want a lot. You don't want to buy separate bottles because they're heavy. I feel like there's so many ways, you know, we could think about this form factor in today's environment. And soda's kind of evolved too. I mean, Pepsi just bought Poppy.
Right. Huge waves going on that market.
So, I mean, soda's evolving. Yep. And I think now it's associated with gut health. Like if you have a probiotic soda, it's healthy, right? So I think it'll be interesting to see if they come out with different sizes.
Well, it's like what I was saying before, water's now in aluminum, right? It's a major market. It's a major shelf space product. So it's interesting to see the innovations coming there. But Matt, I don't know where we're going to next because you got us all over the world, literally all over the world and all over products. So excited for next chat.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.